Learning by Proxy with Vivek Srinivasan. We watched the latest installment of Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. The first thought that you would have had as soon as you exited the auditorium would have been, when is Part 2 arriving? Truth is, even Tom Cruise does not know. The movie has been put on hold. This week, I'm going to be talking about Striking Hollywood. So if you had to make a movie, you had to first get a script together, which is the main outline of the story as to, hey, what happens in this movie. Then you have to turn that script into something that can be rendered in visual format. Like if you're writing a script, for example, you can go on writing descriptive pieces that ramble on for 30 pages. You cannot do that in the visual medium. So you need to adapt that script for a visual medium, and that's where the screenwriters come into play. And that then has to be broken down into screenplay, which is storyboards and scenes that can specifically be performed. Then it goes to the director, who adds his or her visual interpretation of that, and actors then act it out. This is how an entire creative product comes together. Now, when you take shows, for example, there's an additional layer of continuity. When you have characters, you need to be able to maintain that character. You need to understand the nuances of their character. And that's something, again, writers bring to the table. In Hollywood, every creative enterprise is almost like a company, and every person who participates in that gets to partake in the revenue that creative enterprise is able to generate. Now, typically, if you take a movie releases in the theater. Once it's done with the theater, you release maybe CDs, it's released on television. These are called windows. So at every window, there is a certain amount of revenue that is generated. And the actors as well as the writers who participate in creating that movie get a share in that. So, for example, the cast of Friends even today receive about $20 million every year per person from just residual income, which is all the money that's being made through the syndication of their shows onto other channels and other streaming platforms. Now, obviously, that's not the level of success that most shows see. But even screenwriters get about 1.2% of the income that is generated from the distribution of movies as well as television. Now, if you are a writer, you have the additional problem of whether that particular script that you wrote will take off or not. A lot of writers actually work on several projects simultaneously. They put in a lot of time, a lot of effort. To put together the scripts, to put together the stories, to put together the screenplay. And at the last moment, it is very much possible that the studio decides not to go ahead with one of them. I, for one, really loved National Treasure. I thought it was very well researched. It brought a lot of history together. It was a great movie. And they released two installments of it, and the third installment was in the works when they decided not to go ahead with it. You see, in 2007, Pirates of the Caribbean was the biggest franchise that Disney had, and Marvel was starting to take off. In comparison to those two, National Treasure was not such a money spinner, so they just decided to put it on ice. Due to no fault of the writers, it went nowhere. And in such a case, what happens to all of the effort that has gone in? They get the minimum pay. They don't see any additional income come out of that. Now, the Screen Actors Guild was formed back in 1933, and that was when the actors decided to negotiate directly with the studios so that they got to partake in the success of the movies that were put together. The Writers Guild was formed in 1954, especially as the television was taking off, and it was Ronald Reagan, the president, he actually negotiated the residual income for actors as well as writers back in the 1950s. And that system has persisted till today. As cost of living has changed each time, new technology has come into play, the writers as well as the actors have been forced to go onto a strike to renegotiate. And on an average, if you look at it, every decade there has been one strike that has happened. Now, what happened over the last 10 years is there has been a huge paradigm shift in how we consume our content. The pandemic supercharged streaming. Streaming was already coming and slowly killing the cable TV business, but the pandemic really changed that dynamic. Very, very quickly, every one of us moved on to streaming services. I don't even have cable TV anymore. And what that did was, it not only changed the way that money was going towards content, but it also changed the way that these people got paid. So if you take, for instance, Black Widow, the movie was released directly onto the Disney streaming platform because Disney wanted to use that as a bait to get as many new users as possible. Scarlett Johansson actually took Disney to court to get what was due to her because it never got released in the theater, and she would have got a percentage of the box office revenue had it been released in theaters. Now, the entire economics of streaming is very, very difficult to understand because you pay $10 and you get access to so much of content. When you have a movie released in the theater, it's very, very easy to attribute revenue. You pay $10 to buy a movie ticket, that $10 is the movie's revenue. Now, when TV happened, what they did was they created TRP, they created this whole structure to actually analyze how many people were viewing a particular show or series. And based on that, they were then able to determine what is the price of ads being run on those shows. And that then would help determine how much everyone got paid out of those shows based on the popularity of the show. Streaming companies, by comparison, want to keep all of this data private. They are very secretive about which show is successful, how much is the viewership, etc. They don't want to let it on. And being private companies, they are not duty bound to disclose that either. But what this does is it creates a huge degree of opacity so far as the participants in the process are concerned. Nobody knows how much a particular show is being viewed. From the perspective of the streaming companies, they say, look, I'm just collecting $10 from every user, and they are able to watch thousands of shows in a month if they want to. And so the attribution to each one of these shows is probably cents. When you look at it, if you paid $10 and you watched 1,000 shows, that's 1 cent per show that you're actually paying. And when I then start dividing that between the studio that produced the show, between the actors that acted, and between the writers who wrote it, I mean, obviously it doesn't accumulate to a lot. And you have a situation here where you have people who have worked on award-winning shows. You have somebody who wrote Cobra Kai, for example, which is a very, very popular show on Netflix, who has not seen a single dollar of residual income come out of it, although he knows that the show is very, very successful. And there are also people who have acted in Emmy award-winning shows who haven't seen much income come out of it. Sara Sokolovich, who worked in Big Little Lies and Homeland, got a residual check of 3 cents, and her mother informed her that it would probably cost me more to post this check to you than the check is worth. So if you look at it, all of these streaming companies are actually tech giants. You know, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, these are large companies, and therefore they are able to push back on this very heavily. On the other hand, you know, as a culture, these are the sort of companies that won't flinch a bit to pay $100 million as compensation to their CEOs. But paying $10,000 extra to somebody who's at the bottom of the line is very, very painful for them. So in some ways, it's actually a cultural clash between, you know, these two sides. So on the one hand, you have people who are saying, hey, you actually get paid for work that you did in the past. Like, you actually get money for things that you did long, long ago. How is this even true? But If you look at it, that entire creative endeavor is possible because of this. And this is how it should be, don't you think? If somebody is bringing something together, you know, it should not be just because I invested capital on it that I get to take away all of the value that comes out of it. Imagine how much better the world would be if you had construction workers who were benefiting from the long-term value that their work created. Would we have this much inequality? On the other hand, you have the fact that, you know, you have award-winning productions on which, you know, all of these people who participated and all of these people who were able to create such incredible works are getting paid cents to a dollar. Like, I mean, they're literally getting nothing out of that in the long run. So an analogy would be, let's say you went to a really huge Ivy League college. Let's say you went to Harvard and you spent $400,000 on studying there. And you found out that you've been appointed CEO of a company, but you know, you're just going to make minimum wage. Would you be okay with that? Would you not rebel against it? That's the kind of scenario that they are finding themselves in. They put in the time, they put in the effort, they honed their skills to be a part of an industry because they knew the industry worked in a certain way. And now suddenly they find the rules have changed, right? So that's the writer's side of it. But the actors have an even bigger problem, which is AI. Now, AI is something that is increasingly being used, and you know, more than it being used, the potential of its use is huge. Paul Walker was the first actor who was actually acting in a movie after being dead. His shooting for Fast and Furious came to an abrupt halt because he died of an accident. But his brother stepped in and Paul Walker's face was rendered on his brother, and they were able to finish out the movie with him. If you watch the latest Indiana Jones movie, again, you know, Harrison Ford was de-aged and made to look younger by CGI. And studios can claim ownership of these characters, if not the actors themselves. So would there come a day when Disney says, hey, you know, Harrison Ford can be completely cut out and I can just render him. Why not just do it like that? But let's say the bigger actors are not in so much trouble as the smaller ones. So if you take a smaller actor, typically background actors, what happens is they are paid by the day, right? You come in to act for a day for a particular shot and you're paid for that day. Now, if a director decides that they have to take that shot again, normally that actor would be hired again for the retake. But in an AI world, they need not be hired again. Their likeness can be used and AI can render them in the background. And that takes income away from them. And think about the voice actors. If you look at the state at which voice rendering is in AI, they can completely be eliminated. Almost all animated movies can be rendered through AI. Anyway, what is on the screen is being rendered by computer. The voice can also be rendered through AI, right? So these people will end up losing their jobs completely. That category of job will get wiped out completely. And most of this AI will be trained using their voices to begin with. I find it incredibly ironic that Hollywood has been making movies about how computers and robots and AI will take over the world for the last 30 years. And they are the first ones to capitulate to this. So the question is, how is this going to end? You know, from the Wall Street side, they want the studios to win. They are like totally like a break the back of these guys, right? And while the big name actors may not really worry if the strike goes on for even a year, it doesn't make a difference to them. I mean, even the COVID lockdown was a great time for them. It doesn't really hurt them a lot. But for the smaller actors, for the writers especially, it would be very difficult to sustain for a very long period of time. And from the perspective of a lot of the executives, they want this strike to last 6 months so that the writers run out of money and they are forced to come back and negotiate. They just want to take the strike as long as possible so that they can break the back. On the flip side, if you look at the streaming model, the way it's built, We are expecting newer and newer content to arrive all the time. And most of us pay by the month for these streaming services, which means that it's very easy for us to disconnect. It's very easy for us to unsubscribe if nothing new is arriving. If this strike drags on beyond 6 months, I'm sure that a lot of these services will be just left with international content and reality shows. They will not have content that is produced in America, which is a huge chunk of the content that they put out over there. Already, if you look at services like Apple TV, their releases have become anemic. They used to release 2 shows a week. Now they are down to maybe 2 shows a month. It's become very, very slow because they just don't have enough shows to put out there. Disney has been suffering with releases for a very long time. They've been very slow to release stuff. In fact, in India, they are rumored to be trying to sell their Disney Hotstar streaming service completely to either Reliance or Tata. And even in the US, it is rumored that Disney wants to sell off Disney Studios completely to Apple, for whom it's a great asset to purchase, given that, you know, they are on the verge of releasing Vision Pro, and having all of that content would add to what they can offer to the customer. But that notwithstanding, you know, you have this situation where both sides are currently not willing to back down. Both sides are unwilling to have a conversation even. No matter how this plays out, this is going to be one defining battle that's going to establish the power structure of that industry. If the guilds buckle, they'll probably never ever be able to make enough in residual income. And if the studios buckle, then they will be forced to renegotiate several times in the future. Only time will tell how this plays out. Until then, we'll see. I'll bring you another episode next time. Till then, goodbye.